Hey, everybody.
Let me tell you guys that I am so excited. I am so happy. I am really so thrilled to be right now sharing this amazing, glorious, super and exciting moment of my life.
So yeah, we're back with Arturo Tejvili, and now coming. Actually, the last podcast is currently the second place, so now we're coming awesome. For the first place, even harder than the first time, right?
we're going to hit very strong.
Yeah, so just for the people who maybe didn't listen from the first podcast, but many did, so yeah, Harvard graduate, worked for, what's the Ray Dalio company?
Associates.
Yeah, Bridgewater, right?
That's right.
And afterwards, CEO of Genesis AI. We talked about markets last time. We talked a little bit about Genesis.
All the fun stuff.
And it's been 6 months. I think like 6 months when we did it. It was summer, right? We were short sleeves, all of us.
Yeah.
I know in the picture, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been like 4 or 5 months. So I guess we come back to freshen up the topics, you know.
I'm glad to be here again. I'm very glad.
Liking the coconut water.
My first time trying, actually. So really excited. Thanks for inviting guys back, and I'm sure this will be more fun conversations than last time we had.
Yeah, I mean, so to open up, what's new with the Genesis AI? What are the updates?
So yeah, and I'll quickly summarize what we are doing at Genesis AI for new listeners. So we are creating a global AI network. It's basically a web platform that enables companies to buy and sell AI models. Mm-hmm. Anywhere, anyone can deploy their AI technology on our platform, connect their technology to other people's technology, and as a network, our platform's AI models has much better functionality and accuracy rates than if there was just one single model to try to do everything. And on the buyer side, we have all these companies who are looking for AI products and services, but don't want to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of developing those AI services in-house, right? So these companies come to our platforms, they look for AI solutions, they see ratings, and then our platform automatically starts matching them to right AI suppliers. So it's we are right now targeting all the asset management space.
It's Tinder for AI.
But no swiping.
Goldman Sachs is looking. No swiping at all.
No. No. And no super likes either, so.
Right. Only looking for real relationships. No.
Only long-term relationships.
No, but yeah, so that's basically a nice summary. And last time we talked about the business in detail. And what's been new since September?
Yeah, I think September, yeah. So since last time, we made huge progress on the product side. Right now, we have 6 AI applications that people can use. We also invested lots of time and effort in developing what we call cross-provider transfer learning. Basically, the idea is how you can have multiple AI models all working together. Them exchanging data, trading services and learning from each other. This idea of how you can have speech recognition model forces working with sentiment analysis model to produce speech sentiment analysis. Mm. We also added few pilots. We have companies right now using all of our 6 tools, and most of them are pretty happy. So our goal is to keep them happy and also add more pilots.
And these, can you expand a little bit on these 6 tools? Is it that the companies come to the platform and then they immediately can use the 6 tools? That's what the platform offers, or is it, you know, like another company that's registered on the platform or something provides this off?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so anyone, basically companies can use all of these 6 tools. Depending on what type of a company is, they use different tools more often. For example, if you are small hedge fund that's mostly trading based on earnings announcements, you will use mostly our NLP tools. Mm-hmm. But if you are, for example, trading based on, let's say, earnings calls, then speech recognition tools will be more useful there.
Right, and that's all provided by Genesis AI.
All provided by Genesis AI. We also have multiple companies on the supply side, on the wait list. There are companies who would like to deploy their AI platforms, their AI technology on our platform. And I guess it will take us a few weeks before we allow these companies to also deploy their tools, so that we go from 6 AI models to maybe 100 plus AI tools. We don't want to grow too fast, too quick. Rather, we want to start to grow responsibly. We have been growing very fast, but we want to grow responsibly.
Yeah. You see the sun, but you don't want to fly too close. You know,
you're like, that's right. You burn your wings. Yeah.
No, but I like it. Then,
but first, you need wings.
Yeah.
You
know?
I like it because that also probably caters people who like smaller companies who want to try if they gain something from AI, and then they can just unsubscribe again when they notice, okay, we don't have like too much of a growth. So that also happens. There are still probably industries who use AI, but they think, okay, it's not worth it for us. So you don't have
absolutely
put millions of dollars in the development of something. You just use a nicely scalable system.
Exactly. That's an absolutely great point. Yeah. Because we found that everyone wants to use AI, but people don't really know from where to start, you know?
Yeah.
And then nor they want to invest millions of dollars hiring AI engineers and spending so much money and realizing that it's not working, right? Our platform enables people to very easily experiment what they want, to understand what they want, and get the highest quality AI out there possible.
That's interesting. And I had a question. And how many of you are? Because I think last time we were there, you were like 11, 12 people.
So yeah, we have a few team members in the core team, and we also have a few people working part-time with us. So mostly we are engineering team. So our developers are spending most of their time on what we call this enabling connectivity among AI models, because that's our sort of secret sauce and that's the biggest differentiator. And that's also something that we believe can enable creation of foundation of artificial general intelligence. You will have tens of thousands of AI models all working together, all learning from each other, exchanging data, trading services. I think that can be the most practical and fastest foundations that we can create for artificial general intelligence. Because artificial general intelligence, the way I personally define it, it's basically similar to human, right? Human has its different sections, different organs. For example, you have a hand where we can flex your muscle, you have something else for something else, and all are connected to each other, right?
In the brain. You know,
exactly, yeah. One thing cannot do everything, right? Same thing here. We are connecting all these different expert AI so that them as a whole can pretty much do miracles, you know?
So you're like the neural network between these different AIs.
Exactly.
That do different things. You want to be you want to actually make the process of them working together faster and better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And some of the tools we are creating are very useful in markets, especially, you know? And there's so many interesting things happening in the markets as well.
Yeah, man, the markets, there's so many things happening, especially with the upcoming elections, you know?
I know, yeah.
We try not to be too political on the podcast.
Your political.
It's hard to be not political because it's so heavily politicized everything, so.
Yeah. That's right. Maybe Vlad doesn't want to tell to the world what his true political.
It's not important. I cannot vote. there's no importance in my political opinion. Like only in Montenegro, I can go back and cast vote.
Maybe some scary opinions. I don't know. You know.
Maybe somebody wants to offer me a green card. I could vote. 857.
Person one and person two. Person one said, "Oh, maybe we should make a trade agreement." Person two declines first and then agrees, and then people don't feel that well in person two. Environment.
I know. It's the next phase will be some negotiations between US and Europe, right? And Bill being from Germany, well, I guess
they called him to
participate in negotiations.
They said a person with that hairstyle, I think we can do miracles over here, you know.
I said if you pay the flight ticket, I'm in Berlin.
Only one way ticket, right?
What's your sentiment currently in the markets? We had like Davos, right? We had Davos this week, and I was listening to a couple of people, and it's funny listening to the big investor guys or like these accomplished investors.
That's
and
right.
Hedge fund, because they're all like talking between the lines, because they know if they say something, it can reflect on the market, so they're always like not supporting anybody. This might happen, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure about this.
They aren't only making predictions.
What are your positions? We don't have positions currently.
It's 100%
really,
cash.
Yeah.
It's really funny how SEC regulations in the background are forcing you to just basically bullshit on an international stage. You can just say, everything is a bit, but also nothing, and no, and maybe on Sunday, I don't know. I'm reading a book, but how...
I don't even think it's regulations. I think if you're Warren Buffett and you say something...
Yeah, but the problem is, he is, because he's the CEO of somebody, and he's the CEO of a company that's listed on the stock exchange, or he's a fund, basically working in finance, and when he says, I like this, then everybody thinks, he likes this, maybe I should invest in this as well. You cannot impose a bias, so as soon as you're expressing some sort of bias towards something, and as soon as you're expressing some sort of actual opinion, everybody thinks this is what you've done, and then they try to mimic it, and this can distort markets.
This is basically a couple of hundreds of billions of dollars telling you we're in these assets. That's why he can't tell you,
exactly.
Because when I was working with the last startup, we were looking for geothermal energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course Berkshire Hathaway Energy was the one that was owning everything, and it's like billions of dollars, because these are huge. You have to make a huge factory and then go exploration stuff, and they're like, and I was thinking, this is just the energy branch.
I mean, Warren Buffett doesn't like monopolies, but looks like he has a monopoly here. But I guess most people the government might not be fully aware of that, and markets are so here's the thing. I think I have good expectations about markets, especially U.S. equities, in next, I guess, next 12 months around. After as well, I have good expectations. But at the same time, we are at this very high risk, risky situation where interest rates are pretty much zero right now. I guess in U.S. it's around 2%, but in most countries zero or even negative. So there's not as much room to boost the economy if something goes bad. Debt to GDP ratios are the highest it has been in the most countries, especially in China, Japan, and so on, and Germany as well. And there are also so much political fight between people who have and people who do not have, and all these three things create very high risk environment. So if something happens, there's a spark, I think this economy will probably perform as poorly as during Great Depression. It probably will be the hardest depression that the world will ever see. But I'm sort of optimistic about U.S. markets for next year or two. I think this idea of upcoming recession and how Trump will crash the economy, I think it's exaggerated, because there's so much wishful thinking, right? Lots of people want that to happen, and that affects their perception whether that will actually happen or not, whether they think that it will actually happen or not. So I think markets have been doing well. Unemployment rate record low. GDP has been growing faster than everyone expected, basically, and was potential growth. And the markets are strong, and I think now is a good time to live in the U.S. and also in some areas other than areas where there are viruses.
Skip Washington.
Do you think this gives the U.S. some positive leverage in the deals to negotiate all this trade deal? Because right now they notice, there's some mistake going on. There's the health situation is not good. It's spreading out. They have problems with containing it, because they have a very, very uneven distribution of wealth and of infrastructure in China. It's mostly like in almost every city, or in almost every country in the cities, all focused in the cities. And I think in general, regimes who are close to the, or maybe more inclined to the left side of the political stage,
mm-hmm.
are hate to admit wrongdoing. There was another country before Russia. There was the S and the U. And I think the Soviet Union also hated admitting wrongdoing, and I think China is also the same. So if it wouldn't have been so serious, they would have never admitted on the political stage, internationally there is something going on, maybe you should do this. I don't know, maybe we don't know it, maybe they have notified everybody, but officially I would say they tried to play it down.
I think just the fact that we know about it.
I think they tried to play it down.
But the problem might be much bigger. You're absolutely right. Because it's similar, right, when there was this Chernobyl catastrophe,
And Soviet Union was trying to say like, no, nothing.
Exactly, yeah. And so it might be same thing here. The reported number of cases might are less than like 50 right now, yeah. Right? And so, but it might be in hundreds or
no,
like
it went up to 800.
Yeah, and also,
I think I have it here.
And at each level, there's also this pressure all the time to perform,
yeah.
But you have barely any resources to perform, mm-hmm. And maybe already at a local level, everybody is saying, no, all good, it's nothing
so
happening, 50 death. But
so let's, I mean,
we have the
real numbers here from Wall Street Journal. I mean, what do you want?
Huh.
Mainland China, 1,400 cases, 42 deaths. Global coronavirus cases. Italy 1, Finland 2, France 3, Germany 3, one is here, they didn't count you, US 2, Australia 4, Taiwan 3, Hong Kong 5, Macau 2, Japan 3.
What is the coronavirus? Do they have like a simple list, three-step list? What is it? What are the symptoms? You never know when you need to
propagate. It's respiratory. It's
respiratory.
Yeah.
You just feel like pneumonia, you feel shit, you need to cough.
Yeah, I mean, but there's 42 deaths. I mean, this is the
it can go much worse. It can
yeah.
reach millions.
Because the fact, like one good, I was reading
a
book or something, and one thing that we really accomplished as a civilization in like the 20th century is that we won the war against bacteria and viruses.
Yeah.
Like if you go back before the 20th century, we were just fucking man. You have a pandemic or something, the whole population dies out.
Black Death.
It's
yeah, and now
people,
even like World
yeah.
War One, right? Was the yellow fever, the Spanish flu? Like, are you kidding me? And now we kind of won this war, and you have to continuously be careful with these new things coming up.
Absolutely.
You know, like because they're evolving as well. Like it's in nature, you know.
They are, yeah, absolutely.
No. And the problem is also that I think on the regulation side, China has still this problem that they are foregoing long-term safety and long-term stability for short-term growth, meaning here that they forwent a lot of regulations just to say, for example, for pork, this is now a bit different from the coronavirus, which can also be transferred to humans, but for the pork virus, this MRSA thing, no, it's MRSA, something different. Since they're pumping their pigs full of antibiotics to just do not care about healthcare of the pigs, just like pork industry, pick in, pick out pork out of the factory, the viruses have developed nice resistance to all these viruses, and this now I think backfires when you just don't give farmers the incentive to not pump the pigs full of antibiotics, and you don't know where this leads. We're now maybe just being too pessimistic here, but in general that combined with the fact that China doesn't like to admit wrongdoing on the international stage, it might be getting just unnecessarily worse than it has to be.
Let's see.
Yeah.
I mean,
and also they don't want to cause panic, right?
Yeah.
Chinese New Year, lots of millions of people travel. It's a big economic sink for China, right? So if they said that there were 5 million cases, 50% of Wuhan is infected, for example, then I guess no one would really travel and that would be big. Big blow, right?
But I also think that, like, for example, the Chinese society from now today and like 10 years ago is a completely different animal. And I was even listening to Anthony Bourdain,
okay.
the cook who was traveling all the time, who died, committed suicide. Anyways, and I listened to him at one what he did an interview and stuff, and he was always going to China a lot of times.
Yeah.
And he was saying, like, this was I think 5 years ago, that he said in last 10 years, like every time he was coming back, the first time he came, he was like, everybody was on bike and there were some cars.
Yeah.
Then there were like 50-50% cars and bikes. And then at the point, like, I don't know, this was 5 years ago, everybody had cars. And it's really the growth. Yeah, and it's not...
It's very impressive.
Yeah.
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 Well,
and they have, you can even notice here and where we are currently at Halta, there are so many Chinese students. And I remember when I was a kid, when I was going to Egypt, you couldn't enter the Cheops Pyramid because all the Japanese tourists booked it for 5 years. But now, kind of, if you go somewhere, it's Chinese tourists. It's switched.
Mm.
Like, Japan slowed a little bit, but China went, like, skyrocketed. And you can see it. There's more middle class. So there...
Yeah, so now number of tourists is all about... Function of all about how wealthy your country is, right? For example.
That's a luxury.
It's a luxury,
in terms of bank revenue structure, the most important customer in the world right now for the bank industry is the Chinese millennial, because there's the most money to get. They just open up a bank account at Bank of America. They don't care about minimum balance. They just say, maybe this loan, maybe this credit card, I don't care,
and
whatever.
They have a growth potential for earnings in the future, while here the millennials are, no?
Yeah, it's, you know, in 2000... 2007 and 8 when oil prices were high, you know, Russians were doing very well, right? And before the Japanese, before their economy went to complete stagnation, right? Yeah. And now it's China, and they had an amazing transformation, right? And there is, I'm a little skeptical about the future in terms of there is so much non-performing debt there. And there is just like there easily can be a huge debt bubble. So many bad loans have been given out, and it takes a few big banks who have problems to turn to China into complete economic recession, and probably with likely turn the world into recession as well, right?
What you said, I had 3 points for that. One point is, it's so funny because the I think that I've read this week that around 50% of the world economy is US and China. So like if something happens and this trade war, like the impact is so big because you have 250 countries, but you have two countries that have 50% of all the GDP. Second point is what you said with the debt, and it's so true. And I think maybe, I don't know, we can comment on this, but maybe Chinese are bad with debt because they don't have much experience. It's not like here you had one debt cycle, the second debt cycle. Everybody's familiar with the banks. They kind of like save more, that society would have suffered a little bit more. And now they're coming to debt and they're a little bit not really sure how to handle it. And it's probably true what you're saying, that it might happen, a huge recession, which might impact the whole world. And the third thing is, one positive thing that I see in terms of Chinese is that their, if you look at their economy, is like they're, in terms of technology, in all kinds of tech, they're either second or first. They're either number one, like facial recognition and stuff, which is a little bit scary. If you have totalitarian regime with facial recognition and stuff like this, imagine like the communist Russia having like facial recognition and stuff, you would never exit the fucking, you'd never overturn the government. It would be over forever. But like they're in fintech technology, they're very developed. They're either second to US or first, and that's a scary. It's very scary for US, I think. That's why US is fighting them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have been doing a great job, technologically speaking. You know, I think human capital is still much stronger in US, and in the end, it's all about your productivity is a function of human capital and financial capital, right? Financial capital now is approaching similar level in China and. In the US, human capital, I would say, is still much better here. Because here's the thing, if you are the smartest engineer or smartest biologist or something, right, you sort of want freedom. You don't want you to be sent to prison if something bad happens to your company or if you make some mistake, right? There's many... US provides, US has so much institutions, right, and cultures that is very supportive or people doing whatever they want in legal framework, right? So, but China is a population has been growing a lot. Its government has been doing a great job, very good job in terms of economy growth, managing the economy, huge economy. And but I think the number of non-performing loans that are there will have very negative impact. Because at some point you need to repay those loans, right? And if your company is not doing well anymore because of sanctions or because of trade war or whatever reason, because of virus, for example, then you just stop paying it for it, and then you just need to. A few big, large companies not to be able to do it, and then here we go, you have a whole blow-up, right?
And the worst thing would be, imagine at the same time, both economies going down, and that would be it.
Yeah.
And actually, there is a possibility, probably, I don't know what it is, but there is a possibility in the next 5 years, they both go to shit, you know, like...
There is.
That would be very...
Yeah, when
very
the direct investments are then pulled out of China...
And then, Europe rises from the ashes, from negative interest rates. I wonder, they were talking, that was like... I wonder, I don't know if it was the Goldman Sachs guy, I was like telling them, like, I really wonder who are people buying German bonds. Because, like, you give them money and then they are like, oh, yeah, there's 10% less. No, like 1% less in a year, you know? Like, people who are investing?
The thing is, a lot of insurances in Europe are not allowed to invest in anything that has some sort of risk. So you're only allowed to buy insurance sovereignty bonds or of counties or some other, like, supranational. sovereignties. So you have to buy some stuff, and when you have already bought the British ones, which have some yield, or maybe the Spanish ones, and then the Greek ones. I think the Greek ones will already
be. You will forego your revenue
bad.
Just to
no,
forego
the
big
Greek,
risk.
The Greek ones will already be too bad. I think you're only allowed to buy A.
Oh, what about
A,
Greece? Greece, great. Italian and Greek ones. You just have to invest
no,
in Italy and Greek.
That's already too risky.
I know.
Yeah, I know. But they're not allowed to buy that. So you have to.
Right.
You cannot have everything lying around in cash or money.
Right, because if you're a pension fund or some kind of a security, you have to very low
and
risk
it's very
investment.
Hard. That's a huge burden for European pension funds, because when you have no interest yield on anything, but you have to, you hope that your capital stock is creating enough yield to pay off all the people who need some sort of medication, medical services, whatever, and this doesn't work anymore, then you need to constantly eat off your capital stock, and then this is how... some health insurance systems, I think, are on the brink. I think this all needs to be... I think, in general, the European healthcare system is always praised upon all the time, but I think this is a system that is, in the long run, doomed to fail the more older people you have. So maybe more or less we have to be...
That's why Germany is saving a lot of money. Germany is actually pointing out that you guys are saving a lot of money. That might be hurting your economy currently, but basically the reason why they were saving money is because of the growing number of older population and stuff.
Yeah.
And also, what do you mean by European? Bulgarian and German?
No, but the thing is the healthcare structure is more
similar,
or less the same across the EU. It's like, sometimes it's more basic, sometimes it's more complex, but in general, you have the problem when there are less and less younger taxpayers getting jobs that... pay the money and then start increasing.
Let
the
us join
stuff.
The EU. 600,000 people from Montenegro, which we're very young. We can bring our age, guys. You know, like, we've been candidate for 5 years. What the fuck?
28 hours per day they're working.
No, but I wanted to come back to our guest and one question. Let's go back to the US market. You remember we were talking about that you have a good opinion, good kind of perspective for the next 12 months and stuff. And I agree, and probably one of the reasons is because currently if you look at the cash levels in the state, I would say, cash deposits, like these quick cash, if you have in the bank, let's say your checking account and stuff like this, does savings account count as a M1? No, it doesn't. Savings, you cannot withdraw quickly,
it
will be just checking. It's huge. A lot of money is just there, so there is still potential money to go from cash. As Redali would say, cash is trash. to the equity market. Do you think they have any opinion on this, or have you been following this kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I guess in the end, the economy is driven by spending, right? So if spending goes up, country is doing well. If people are spending less, and in the short term, it's bad, right? Because that means that people get less income, right? Because your spending is someone else's income, right? And his spending is someone else. Someone else's income as well. And so I guess there is, on a high level, whether people spend a lot or not, all depends on how optimistic they are about the future.
Yep.
If they're optimistic about the future, then you're going to spend. If you think that the economy will collapse and your assets will go down, your house will go down to 20% of its current value and so on.
You'll have to sell your bike for 50 bucks. Eh?
If a German bike, maybe 100 bucks. Then people stop spending, right? They invest in very low risk assets, it gets very low returns there and so on. So
then the gold comes.
No,
gold flourishes. But
gold is already flourishing.
Gold is doing well.
And
I see
stuff
everyone.
Like palladium and what's the other one?
No, but
platinum metal, palladium and platinum itself.
Yeah. But precious metals, right?
Yeah.
So two things. I also wanted to, if you want to say something else, did we interrupt you? Or?
Yeah, I was just saying that it's a main reason why Japan went into 0% year-over-year GDP growth territory was because people became so skeptical and pessimistic about the future, they stopped spending, you know?
Yeah.
And this really was result why there was a deflationary environment in Japan last 20 years.
It's very, very very, very sentiment-driven. And that's why I think they were all very, very, on a planetary level, very careful to say, yeah, there might be a recession coming. Everybody was like, no, we don't see signs. No, we don't see signs. 2-6 months later, no, we still don't see signs. And in Germany, they're always calling it a growth dent. It's not a recession, it's just a growth dent. It's just like, shh, and then...
But the Japanese also became older, you know?
It's also true. But here's the thing, lots of people have this opinion that pension funds will need to go bankrupt at some point because of how the dynamics of number of contributors and number of people who are getting pension are changing, right? Because people are living older, longer right now, so they stay into retirement age longer. But I think we already see this trend, but people start to work longer than they used to, and there might be a chance.
Not in France, sorry.
For good enough reasons, I guess, if you live in France, probably there's so much other opportunities to have fun, right?
But that's really the thing. You work longer because when you are a programmer, you can easily work until, I would say, 70. Because it's
right.
Maybe if you're not super careless with your health and you're not super obese and you have a heart attack before, you can work longer because...
No, but programmers are very healthy. They move a lot and activity and
stuff. On average.
I think
people just realize that early retirement usually does not bring happiness that people thought before, right? Because usually if you retire early, then you're missing out with some of the social interactions that humans really need to strive and be happy, right?
To die out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's just a matter of time before people completely realize it. Maybe we should never retire.
But let me add one thing. Don't you think that in terms of like these pension funds, as I understand it, they usually invest in these low risk, right, assets that usually give you some kind of return, right? But now as these bonds and bonds are all negative and stuff like this, do you think that has an impact because the return of asset is smaller?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, here is, I guess, when people see that, then they try to reallocate their portfolio, right? So people could try to go and allocate more in stocks, for example. Or at some point, people start to allocate some for Bitcoin. Right?
Yeah, I was opening crypto watch. You're reading my mind. What do you think about the? We touched this a little bit over the last, and I actually since then I worked with a startup that was completely in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and stuff, and I learned really a lot about like what's happening. There's a happening happening. You know what the happening is?
Yeah, Bitcoin's
reward goes to and there's speculation and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in Bitcoin in the long term.
Shocking news! Bitcoin price skyrocket.
I think single-handedly moved the price of Bitcoin, right? So I'm a big believer because I think it would be just a matter of time because before people start to realize that this might be good substitute of gold, you know, and then people will start to gradually allocate more money to it, and volatility will start to go down. And if volatility reaches same level as gold, then Bitcoin might can easily take lots of share from this idea of store of value, right? I don't think it will work as a transaction mechanism. For the Libra, it's probably much better, has much better potential to work as a transaction money, but as a store of value, it might be great. And I think more decentralized should be achieved in Bitcoin. Now you still have 10 people, basically 10 groups controlling the whole system, you know? And if big mutual funds will start to invest their money, they don't want to be fully dependent on the intricacies of these 10 people who control Bitcoin completely, so.
Yeah, you know what I want to add? What you were saying, 10 people control Bitcoin, and it's funny how if you compare the crypto asset markets to regular equity like markets, the level of it's still very young. Kind of how they perceive stuff, and it's still unregulated. So like you, for example, had like there was a Wall Street Journal article on that as well, and there was some professor trying to. There was allegedly one of the crypto exchanges, the guys who owned the crypto exchange, when the Bitcoin, you remember when Bitcoin skyrocketed?
Mm-hmm.
So you have these tokens, and then you have the tokens that are paired with dollar, pegged completely. So one for one.
Yeah.
So apparently they moved money from the exchange to these tokens, and then they produced a lot of these tokens, but then they really didn't produce them 1-to-1, they produced them 1-to-0.7, so they overproduced them. Then they invested all of these tokens that they produced into Bitcoin to increase the price of Bitcoin, right? To reap the rewards afterwards and sell the Bitcoin that they had. And I was like, and at the same point, the whole Bitcoin kind of environment, the crypto assets are like, they don't want to be centralized. But at the other hand, you have three guys from Italy, they're Italian, of course. You had three, sorry, all Italian friends. You had three guys from Italy who like moved this, and then they do, I forgot what was the name of the token that they were using. Tether, I think, yeah. Tether.
Probably, yeah.
Tether. And they were using Tether to buy Bitcoin to appreciate the price, right? And they're
so
making a claim.
Yeah.
And at the same time, what you were mentioning, that they, Bitcoin might not be used as a transaction but mechanism, but as a kind of a mechanism for store value. And I think that there is a geopolitical war there happening as well, because the interesting thing is, you know that US is dominating the all the transactions in dollar, right? 88% of all the transactions in the world are dollar based. And it's a, if you want to buy oil and then we cut you the dollar, you're not going to buy oil. You have to go work something around with the EU, like Iran is, for example, and stuff like this, right? It's a huge problem. And I think US doesn't, it's not in their interest for any kind of cryptocurrency to substitute the dollar. And I think on the other side, you have China, who has like 10% of their kind of global transactions are coming from yuan. It's not really, it is important, but it's not so important in the global terms, right? So I was thinking that the whole thing where I feel like that the US, and they moved forward, you can now buy options in Chicago and stuff like this. The US is kind of pushing this agenda where we want this to be a store of value. And then you have China, who is like developing its own currency. The government is trying to develop its own currency, of course, control it, stuff like this. So I think also there's like a global battle where, like, going back to trade wars, China is kind of pushing this agenda where, okay, we want these to become transactions, because then if this actually takes over control of the many transactions that are in world trade, then you have US power in terms of currency loosening, blah, blah, blah.
That's a great point, because Russia and China and everyone has been trying to reduce world's reliance on USD, right? Because whoever controls the main means of transaction controls the banking system, worldwide banking system, right? If you can sanction people so easily, right? If you are US government, cut them off completely from the everything, all the international transactions everywhere, from everything. Yeah, you become
isolated.
Completely isolated, And China does not want the world to rely on that, because then the US has so much leverage power when they are negotiating with Tanzania, for example, right? Because if you don't do what US tells you, then you'll be cut off, right?
And then you cannot trade with anybody.
And that's much worse than getting a virus, right?
Getting just a cold. But this is kind of, and I don't know. And you know what's funny with Bitcoin is that, for example, if you, because I was thinking in terms of valuation of the whole thing, because everybody's like, oh yeah, we don't know what's the actual value and stuff. If you look at blockchain as an underlying, because it's 90% of all blockchain is supported with crypto assets, right? And if you look at blockchain as something as of value, right? If it's getting adopted but supported by cryptocurrencies, because you need miners to support the whole blockchain thing. So if a blockchain expands, you'll need more cryptocurrencies, more miners. And you have companies like Bitmain that was evaluated at $40 billion. And it's one of the competitors who are producing these, the biggest company who's producing the miners itself. And it's it's not small anymore. $40 billion is not—it's not like a sneeze of a Wuhan virus, you know.
What I like is that they have that you have basically two that you have two different components, the blockchain and the cryptocurrency, and then they notice that you can use this blockchain stuff for something completely different now, and then they've tried to repurpose it for all kinds of contracts and all kinds of secured systems where some sort of sequential order is required, and you want to make sure that the step before you was properly done or is properly verified. So this is actually, I think that's unique. I think that that's really
The smart contract is also
smart contract is it's a good thing.
There's a potential.
Yeah, with smart contracts, you know, blockchain or industry did not invent idea of sort of ifs and type statement codes, right? Where if this happens and this happens, that's what smart contract is, right? It basically says if this happens and this happens.
Yeah.
So it just there is just so much branding and so much. I think I'm not sure how much depth there is, you know, because lots of security distributed systems. Crypto space did not invest distributed systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So distributed data storage existed for many, many years, right? Amazon has been, AWS has been doing distributed data storage for a long. Dropbox is doing, everyone is doing it, right? But there are definitely unique stuff that is very crypto specific, right? For example.
But I think sometimes the world or in general the industry needs some sort of metaphorical ass kick. Just a reminder, okay, this is smart contracts, this can work and it works
kick?
Better,
mm-hmm.
like a metaphorical ass kick, because
mm-hmm.
everybody, it's actually so simple, it's just a simple if condition, or when you want to oversimplify it, it's just like, if
change
your
perspective,
if this is verified, then do this, it should work, it should have worked for 50, 60 years at least, since we have pre-sales
at
hand, but now everybody's like, oh, this is new, maybe we can rebrand this, and when there is money to get, when there is rebranding to get, when there are startups to mate with, when there is like, new ways
there's money
coming,
to be made.
There's money to be made. Then everybody's reminded. Oh, let's do it. Maybe we open our drawer again and work on it again.
Quick 5-second quiz
mm-hmm.
for the listeners and also for the participants. What's the price of Bitcoin? If you would guess,
I know
8.3.
I know 7.5.
Oh, 8.3. Did you check
oh,
it out before
no,
you came
I
in?
Not, I
oh
not.
My God, 8.345.
I have 1% of my portfolio.
Is that what teach you with Harvard telepathy with the prices? You're like just walking and you
he has an
Tesla is here. Bitcoin.
The lad told me what the question would be before.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want to compromise anybody here. So
yeah.
No, but also one question. This is completely different now.
Fair treatment for all.
Equal opportunity provider at the Financially Independent Podcast. No, but I wanted one thing that I wanted to mention is that we were also talking at the party. I was talking with a couple of people because I noticed when we were chatting, everybody's drinking, you know, like, and I was noticing that 80% of people that were working in the room were working for startups.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was thinking, this is not really realistic, probably, that we're all working in startups and there is just so much fucking capital in startups. What happens when shit hits the fan? What's your opinion?
That's a good question. Yeah, so I think next trigger of financial crisis can stem from late stage startups blowing up, and here is what I mean by it. So currently companies are staying longer in private than they used to before, right? And there are all these hot companies like WeWork and Airbnb and so on, who every single investor wants to invest. And now, because those companies are very late stage, you're talking about investments in size of billions, right? And if you are SoftBank and you're competing against Tiger Global, in who will get the investment opportunity in Airbnb, what do you do? You tell them, oh, you know, I can help you with that and that. But in the end, what people cares the most is valuation, right?
Right.
So you tell them, I will give you 10 billion more valuations than Tiger Global is giving you, right? So this valuation is just a function of people competing to be able to invest in a startup, right? So valuations at Airbnb and Spotify, I guess Spotify is a different story now, but Airbnb and some other companies have that still have not gone public is completely higher than what I would argue true valuations are. And people are starting to realize that the valuations are off, right? WeWork, for example, valuation was reduced from like 8 billion to 8, and I think it will go down to even maybe like 1 billion,
right.
You know? And it would just take some time for people to realize that they invested so much money into these late stage startups at much higher valuations. They're probably never going to get that money back. And then they will start to withdraw money from these venture capital funds.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Andreessen Horowitz had almost terrible returns, worse returns than the S&P 500 in last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And then people start to withdraw money. The startups won't be able to get loans. They won't be able to gets additional we see, because we see money will be sort of all profit oriented and not revenue or user oriented, and then the startups might start to go bankrupt, you know. And if you have a few big names pretty much going bankrupt, that might cause huge problems in the economy.
Yeah. This might be like the WeWork might be Bear Stearns, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly. And there will be more companies like WeWork, you know.
Yeah.
And do you think that in general, when I extrapolate this a bit more into the future, do you think that this will lead to startups having their own separate recession, separate from the whole government? Because now that all these VCs are thinking, okay, this is all horribly inflated, what we invested in, and this we were just so, money was easy to get, but when the big recession hits, then at a smaller level, they're all like very, very hard to get, and then the VCs are suddenly the people who are not coming over to your startup when you have five people there sitting and chilling a bit, and they will all be like very, very, due diligence will be much harder, money will be much harder to come by, so maybe startups have their own mini recession, because the next, I don't know, maybe 2-3 years have, the startups have super hard time to get money, and that's why most of them die.
I don't think it's a mini thing. You know, if you have if your startup is valued at $40 billion, that's not a mini recession. It's a fucking company.
I know, but mini recession in terms of it's more or less
was it
really
contained in startups?
Yeah.
It's a great question, and I would say that it can. There's a higher chance that it will just be contained to startups, but I think higher chance that it will not, and here is why. In China, as well, valuations are even worse. For example, companies that raise Series C in China are valued around 3 times more than US companies. And how and why, right? And it's even worse in other markets. In Europe, it's more conservative, so I think it might not spread well into Europe's startup system, right? Because valuations are so much lower there. But in US, big startups, while billions of dollars will go underwater, that will cause people to lose belief in this technology sector, and then the large firms that still are not making money, for example, Uber is not making money, Slack is not making money, so many public traded companies whose stocks are owned by mutual funds and hedge funds and so on, people will start to realize that these companies are trash as well, and then it might spread to general technology companies. Most of them are trash. Amazon is not making too much money. Doesn't make sense to be valued at around $1 trillion. I don't think so.
I was just thinking, right, Slack is public, right? They were doing this deal that they tried to circumvent banks and tried to save the fees, right? I was just thinking, right,
this is the funny
WhatsApp 2.0.
Because I think we discussed this before. And one thing I want to address before we make this point is that for the listeners who are listening and we talk about valuations, basically a financial valuation is an opinion of a financial analyst, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of funny with WeWork that the SoftBank was like, they were like, I think we made a mistake by trusting the guy. And I'm thinking, you made the mistake trusting the guy? You're SoftBank? You probably have the best fucking financial analyst in the world evaluating this. You knew what you were evaluating, but you probably were thinking like, we're going to go to an IPO, we're going to get our money back. Who gives a fuck? We made the return of 250%. And that's kind of really funny for me. But I wanted to, what was I talking about? I wanted to make a point that I think all of this, and I think we discussed this a little bit briefly in the last one or a different podcast, that this kind of like, you had the quantitative easing and a lot of money going to people who owned assets, and all of a sudden rich people had so much money on their hands that they invested in more riskier things.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it created like a 10-year kind of a, even currently like a, unrealistic environment where so much money moved into these assets and kind of overflow with cash.
Absolutely. And you know, there is a big problem I see about traditional VC market is not anyone can invest in these cool companies, right? And then you have, then there was this change in laws that enables everyone to invest in early stage startups, like small portion of their total wealth, and it's called equity crowdfunding, right? And we actually decided to do equity crowdfunding for Genesis AI instead of just going through this traditional VC route, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been absolutely great journey so far. We started around a few days ago, and As this idea of allowing everyone to participate in building the future AI companies, it might potentially, you know, contribute to the economy a lot. That idea is a democratization aspect. Share AI for all and share the ability to invest. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in that idea.
Is it still available for our listeners? If somebody wants to join, is the WeFunder campaign still open?
WeFunder campaign is open, okay. And is open. And
should we provide the link or?
We can provide the link later if you wish to. Yeah.
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 First.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so it's the idea of investing world is changing completely, right? Now also people started to have an opportunity to invest in a new potentially global reserve currency, Bitcoin, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
it's digitalizing everything.
Everything is
but I think also that for example, for me personally, I'm thinking now, let's start with this crowdfunding stuff a bit, or let's start with the when I had my endeavor to try to do masternodes for other cryptocurrencies. It was too complex at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's after the Bitcoin skyrocket endeavor, everybody's like, okay, if I had just put $100 in Bitcoin today, I would be a millionaire. It would have been so easy money. So more and more people, I think, are thinking, maybe this is the next Bitcoin, and I just put $100. Maybe this is the next Bitcoin, I put also $100. So this is far more accessible than I don't know, buying a bond from UK, and then I get these perpetuities, and then I get 1.3% my entire life.
And then at some point people realize that UK government is probably not going to pay, pay the whole amount, and then whole bond market goes to decrease a lot, right? It's also a big question. Are trillions of dollars that's in bond markets that's being rolled over and over again, will that be actually getting paid or not, right?
That's actually a funny thing, how sovereignties are able with these bondholder clauses, UACs,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Universal
basic income.
Like these clauses that all bondholders can decide.
We're decreasing
the payment, the coupon payment, or we're increasing the maturity of the bond, and you have 10 more years to
pay off. Okay.
So they're trying to desperately evade default now, and maybe in 10 years the economy is doing better. So this is the thing. It's like a potentially eternal loan you're giving somebody. So this is a bit of a thing I'm thinking. If the bonds are structured in that way that you can modify everything just to your needs and skew towards your needs, it's a bit of a weird thing for sovereignties.
Interesting, yeah. And also, you know, everyone is talking about deflation and how inflation is bad, but I think the risk of inflation is actually zero, you know, and substantial. Why? Because now there's so little you can do to boost the economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one way people, central banks might do this by just by printing money and inflating assets, and also that will go directly into inflating the prices as well. So I think it makes sense now to allocate small portion into inflation linked bonds, you know, because there is a chance that inflationary environment might come back. Because people just like central banks might start buying a lot and printing lots more money.
Yeah, because also I think U.S. I mean, Trump has mentioned that they want to pay back the debt. And I mean, I think also the reason why that you have so much debt currently is because the interest rates are, you know, low, and it's a good time to get a loan and stuff.
Yeah, and now is a good time to get a loan, refinance. And,
yeah.
I guess you should really be careful with terms, because if terms are flexible, then if interest rates go up, then.
Yes.
Like the good old 2009 thing. Oh,
no.
The first payment is just $250, and the next payments are $25,000. Terms and conditions apply. By
no, but
and in the end, the ad said very fast. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Terms.
One thing that I've been following more or less is the what's happening in the energy market, and if you look at what's happening with the bankruptcies that you have in the oil and gas, and you have a huge slump of oil and gas, for example.
Yeah.
You have a huge slump of gas, and the gas prices. This is funny how the system works, because like in the 20th century, in order to make proper energy distribution systems, you had like, let's say, in New York in the beginning of the 20th century, you had one street and two energy providers.
Yeah.
And because they were mixing together, there you have a lot of energy, like bursts, flames, and you had like fires and stuff like this. So in the energy market now, they're actually cool if there is like a one DSO, one ISO, supporting just like, let's say, you have three energy systems in the whole US, four energy systems, right? So it's okay to have a monopoly. It's not bad. And currently you have these energy, so much gas is produced that you have so many reserves. And because of, how do you call them, flaming, you know, when they have, you have too much gas, you have to flame it.
Yeah.
But then you cause CO2 and stuff. You have companies that are mining Bitcoin that are going into flaming because they use the gas from flaming, right? They curtail it and they use it to power their Bitcoin operations, right?
Mm.
And the other companies like it. The big gas producing companies, because they have to pay less fees in the penalties, because they have to pay penalties that are huge, like $1 million for I don't know how much flaming and stuff. So there is like a complete industry developing there because there is a huge glut. And for example, the gas prices for your home are still the same.
Yeah, because they tell you on your bill, because of increasing demand.
Increasing demand.
The price per therm is now double. And I'm thinking, no, should I now print it out from Bloomberg and show you?
And it's so funny how you see the monopoly there happening. But like, one thing I want to point out is that...
Yeah, I don't think my house gas bill changed at all,
Yeah, but the
gas price definitely declined a lot, yeah.
Yeah. But the per therm is just double, so they pretend it's high demand.
I mean, the prices should be very low, but they're manipulating because they're allowed to technically to have a monopoly. But one thing I want to point out is you have a lot of these, you know, like in the last 10 years wanting to change in the global scale, and many say that this is the reason why you can have like an attack on a gas power plant in Saudi Arabia, and you can have almost a full-fledged war between Iran and US, and the price of oil just does like a tick up, tick down, tick up, tick down, is because US went from being, I don't know, 5th, 10th producer of oil and gas to number one.
That's
like,
right.
And but many of this was fueled by fracking, right? And many of these companies were smaller fracking companies. And now there's I read that in 2019, with regards to 2018, the increase in bankruptcies of these companies went up by 50%.
Yeah, that's right.
And they are not paying their debts. And what happens when?
It's questions like how big those debts are, right? If it's so big that it can affect. Lots of different states, probably definitely will affect Texas, right? But if it will be contained there, then it should not be too big of a concern. But in general, the dynamic is very interesting that if OPEC curtails its output, then what happens is prices go up in a very short term, and then the fracking companies in US, they substitute the supply, right?
Right.
So,
and then...
Exactly, and in the meantime, OPEC loses market share, right? So they know that they don't even want to curtail prices by a lot, but curtail the supply by a lot.
Because
know?
Then they help the US also.
Pretty
the
much,
US
they just lose the market share in the long term, you know? And also on the US side, there's so many companies who took so much debt that they want to repay, and so they just care about as long as price hits the number where they can be sort of broken, you know, they completely... pump,
and you can see
much,
you
right?
can see this in Texas energy prices. You have areas in Texas where they pay you to take energy because they have so much energy. You have Peter Thiel invested $50 million in a Bitcoin mining
operation
in Texas because the energy prices are so low they can compete with China.
Wow!
For the first time they can compete in China, and in China it's like this guy is kind of insinuating is like, oh yeah, we're gonna take over the mining, we're gonna make our own cryptocurrency, and then Bitcoin tanks and stuff. But it's interesting. I don't know. I'm thinking like, how does it play out in terms of what really happens? Let's say you have energy crisis in the US, right?
Yeah.
All this growth was kind of fueled by debt, right? And let's say a certain portion of these companies go out of business. What happens to the global supply? We know that the OPEC has a lot of supply that they're saying that they're not releasing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know. Now they're going to go public, so... But it's Saudi Arabia, so
mm-hmm.
will everybody get the information how much they have in the backup? But what happens if the US supply all of a sudden goes down?
Yeah.
What happens? Do prices go up? Does the OPEC says cool, or do they really like this?
Yeah, it's very easy substitutable, you know, supply. If one US company goes bankrupt and they cannot pump anymore, then another company will just pump more, you know.
Right.
It's and demand is it has been actually going down, right? Or I guess the increasing demand has been going down because of slowdown in China.
Right.
You have the supply, huge supply problems, and you have demand that's growing much less than it used to be before, right? So unless there's a fundamental change in terms of there's something that happens in Iran or some other places, then but it's unlikely, right?
Yeah.
Or at least Trump doesn't seem to do anything there, right? So it's a hard, world oil market prices, I think it will stay around 60 between, maybe 17 good cases. It can also go lower to 40, but I think it makes sense to allocate some portion to it.
That was funny how short-lived all this was. It was like 2 weeks ago, oh my goodness, maybe World War III, and it's so close to war with Iran, and now nobody talks about it anymore, nothing in the media.
I mean,
already over.
We live in a different era now, where it's like, I think we're always comparing this era and like how it's weird. I think it's changed forever. Like, we have so many informations, it's like, that's why everything is short-lived, because the next day you find out about China virus. If you lived 50 years ago, like, the news from Iran would travel 2 days until you find it out. Maybe you see it on television.
That's right. I think people really overreact, when there were drone attacks on Saudi fields. Oil price went up by a lot, and then everything went back to the normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there might be an interesting strategy, a trading strategy might be to, like, track this big political events,
mm-hmm.
and when something bad happens, price usually goes either higher than it should go.
Mm-hmm.
So people overestimate probabilities of doomsday scenario, right?
Because it is so easily available and readily available, because when the oil price moves up because of the oil tech, it's probably several hundred traders across the world sitting there seeing that on TV and immediately like, oh my goodness, let me buy, or let me quickly call somebody and then let me
right.
buy.
But
then this
right.
is
yeah. What I was thinking is that if you have, let's say, if you have a full-fledged crash of this oil, US oil producers, right, where they are just filing for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And this sends the prices up. At the same time, you have the kind of economic downturn. You have some kind of an economic downturn, which sends the demand down, which sends the price up again. And if price of oil skyrockets, that impacts everything, because you need a truck to move these goods from here to there.
Yeah.
And then you have,
big problems.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Then you have everything's pricier, and at the same time, you have a downturn. So. But you don't have interest rates to lower them.
Exactly.
So what's going to happen?
And
you
also have a virus on the side.
Yeah, a virus on the side.
To quickly wrap it up next to virus and whatever. The 1 hour mark.
Yeah, it's okay. Do you still have time or?
I probably need to go in like 2 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
Take a picture as well.
Yeah, definitely. No, we took some for the podcast already. We're not gonna forget this time.
Yeah.
With the beautiful, not so beautiful view
penthouse,
today.
Penthouse.
Yeah.
It's a great weather outside.
we're wearing it was.
in the swamp of Moria.
Oh, dude, it's very cloudy. There's no sun.
The toilet Boston weather.
This is the traditional Boston weather.
Yeah, it's I don't know.
Yeah,
but you know what's weird? It's like we are already in January. Think this is end of January.
Oh,
we haven't had a proper cold.
This has been the best winter. Has been the best winter. I think every year I'm saying this is the best winter,
And then the shit hits the fan in February.
Exactly.
February
happens always, dude. It shits the fan. There's at least one snowstorm. It's every winter, right?
Yeah.
So
no, we already have two.
But I mean, right?
Not the one where we didn't even have classes.
Yeah, I remember I was telling my father, he's like, it's snowing.
Yeah.
I'm so happy. And he's like, why? And I'm like, because it's warm.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, it's zero.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, at least there was no snow where you need to wear boots, And
yeah.
You cannot walk from one place to another place, right?
So we go
to the restroom real quick, and we can take a picture after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
cool. This was very good, guys.
Yeah.
We're gonna.